Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only. Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Metaverse Musings. Today, I am delighted to introduce you to John, the founder and CEO of SuperRare, who are one of the leading crypto art platforms. John, thank you for joining us. Can you kick us off with a kind of high level about sort of what SuperRare does and where you guys are in the market?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Piers, first of all, thanks so much for having me here. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast. And for those folks who don't know, SuperRare is one of the first crypto art platforms built on top of Ethereum. We've been around since 2018. And to date, we have the most on-chain volume out of any of the Ethereum-based crypto art platforms.
Wicked, man. Can you give us a quick summary of your personal background as well leading up to crypto, and then we'll jump into the sort of art stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of like prior to crypto, I was working in creative tech and advertising in New York. Art was always a pretty big part of my life. I got interested in processing and open frameworks in college. So I was pretty into kind of like generative creative coding. So I went to work in advertising. And while I was there, discovered the New York Bitcoin meetup, got pretty excited about that. I had, kind of been through the 2008 financial crash in an econ class, and like that kind of piqued my interest. And so, with those kind of two threads in art and crypto, I joined Consensus pretty early on to kind of help, teach people about smart contracts and kind of like, educate folks on kind of the power of, programmable money and value transfer. And then I guess it was late 2017, kind of decided that, with the implementation of the NFT standard, it seemed like the right time to go kind of, merge my two passions in art and crypto. And so started working on SuperRare.
That's awesome. I mean, back then, though, as you say, sort of early formulations of the sort of ESC 721 standard and whatnot. I mean, seeing the kind of opportunity in crypto art back then was kind of impressive. Sort of, to my mind, it definitely wasn't like a sure thing that this would resonate with people to quite the degree it has. What was the core kind of motivation that gave you confidence to pursue this and set up SuperRare?
Yeah, so I had, just kind of like my background, following along, I had friends who were kind of part of, the contemporary art market. So friends who were in art collectives in Brooklyn, and I had a couple of friends who ran galleries. So I was, somewhat familiar with like the art fair scene. And, a lot of the art that really resonated with me was just purely digital in nature. So, like there's huge breakthroughs and projection mapping technologies, so like kind of building these immersive environments and just, seeing what was happening, the work I'd been doing with, kind of like generative art, but then also seeing stuff with AR and VR. Like, I just really felt that, 10 years from now, there's just going to be infinitely more interesting digital art than there is today. And, if we can, if we could build kind of like the right interface, build the right UX, I think people are going to really get excited about collecting this type of art. And so, seeing what was capable with kind of like a standard like NFTs, I felt like that was kind of one of the missing components. So people had, tried to build kind of collectible digital art platforms before, but really what was missing was kind of that like, something like the NFT standard. It's super simple. It works across wallets, easy for people to understand. And so I felt like that was kind of like a game changing sort of evolution and decided that that was the time. Admittedly, we were probably a little bit early. The first 2 years were certainly kind of slow and steady growth versus last year, which was
quite no exciting. Doubt. It must be very rewarding to finally see things picking up off the back of 2020, which was obviously a crazy year for you and for some of the other platforms out there too. I'm curious, each platform kind of has to make sort of different trade-offs, right? For example, some support and promote credit card providers up front for payments. Others, such as yourselves, want to keep the bar high, have a sort of manual artist admission process. What were some of the hardest design decisions you've had to make, some of the kind of unique considerations around building a crypto art platform?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think the first was just, around curation, right? Like on one hand, you could build something that's totally open, but then, building a consumer app around that, you need to have really good moderation tools, kind of spam prevention. And, we didn't want to spend a lot of upfront time, getting that right. So kind of decided to go the more heavily curated route, which, was a little bit tough at first, right? Especially in crypto, people love to point at you and say like, oh my God, you guys are gatekeepers. This is horrible. But I think, 3 years in, I think people understand, the reasons and the motivation behind, kind of wanting it to be a more curated experience. I think eventually, as the market grows, obviously platforms can open up more, but currently it makes sense to have it be more curated than not.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think that's one of the really cool differentiators that you guys have. There's a prestige to the artists on your platform, and it's, people celebrate it on Twitter when some of their favorite artists finally get onto it and whatnot. But kind of aside from that, what do you feel you guys have done differently that's maybe sort of allowed you to grow to where you are versus some of the other, Ethereum-based crypto art platforms?
Yeah, I think there were kind of two main things. So one was kind of early emphasis on building kind of a fun, engaging sort of social layer into the platform and into the product. If you think about other platforms like, SoundCloud or some of these other kind of like fun, creative online platforms, a big part of it is, being able to, connect with other humans, right? Even though we're doing this in this digital metaverse, really at the end of the day, there's humans behind the keyboards. And so really trying to, humanize the experience, build out social profiles. I think, one of our early successes was kind of having the familiarity of the activity feed, right? You can kind of see everything that's happening on the platform. But at the same time, it was also pretty challenging. So a lot of, kind of like content patterns that have developed for, like building a product where it's like the goal is to consume a lot of content, like doesn't really work for art, right? You kind of want it to be slow and thoughtful versus just get somebody to keep scrolling forever. So there were definitely some challenges there, right? Kind of trying to balance the tension between building a fun, engaging product, but then also kind of trying to design for slow, thoughtful appreciation of art.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, the notable other platform that's really risen to prominence over the last year is Nifty Gateway, who have really been focusing on this drop model, bringing in, recognized talent from outside the ecosystem. Most recently was, the Rick and Morty creator, and Beeple obviously was the big headline last year. What are your thoughts on their platform? Are there any things in particular you think they're doing well or anything they might be able to improve on?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing a great job, right? Like reaching out, bringing in, people with big followings who kind of like have splashy names and big drops. I also think, the drop model is very cool. I think, it's a pattern we learned from streetwear and, seeing that applied to digital art and collectibles is super interesting. Let's see. Yeah, so I mean, generally, I think they're, obviously, I think, we're doing a better job, but they're, they're also crushing it. It's exciting to see other people succeeding in the space, because I think, honestly, a lot of people are kind of underestimating how big this market's going to be.
Mm-hmm, very much so. Agreed there. I think there's plenty of room for everyone for the time being. I'm curious to get your thoughts as well on a lot of people have suggested that some of these record setters are kind of, you know, deliberately inflated prices to help lure others into the ecosystem. What are your thoughts on that, you know, the prospect of kind of collusion amongst large whales?
That's, you know, it's certainly possible. I think, you know, that's sort of one of the reasons I do like kind of our on-chain approach, right? It's super easy to see, you know, you can be sure that it's not, or, you know, when you see somebody's wallet and that they've, you know, been collecting for a year versus like a new whale that hasn't collected anything else, you know, placing a huge bid. I think that added transparency is pretty great and kind of like embodies the, you know, the ethos of crypto and trying to build transparent markets. So, you know, that's kind of why, or one of the reasons that we sort of prefer the on-chain approach. As far as like, you know, speculation around people trying to pump, you know, the prices of art, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of, you know, sort of like another sort of motivation for SuperRare was that, like, in addition to building a tool that would serve creators and artists who, you know, weren't really being taken seriously by the art market, there's sort of a similar problem with collectors, right? Like, if you want to be an art collector, it's kind of hard to get started. You know, you like galleries aren't necessarily super, you know, friendly to newcomers walking in off the street. There's sort of like a, you know, a who's who kind of like snobbery. And I think a lot of that is kind of gone with the ethos of crypto art. Like, it's more about inclusion versus exclusion. And so there's a ton of people who are like, this is their first time where they can say like, you know what, I am an art collector, I'm going to do this. And so, you know, it's possible that people are colluding and trying to pump prices, but at the same time, there's, you know, genuine excitement. Cause I think a lot of these people haven't really collected art before.
Very much so. I'd agree with that. If you had to kind of distill the core value proposition of NFTs into just a few words or sentences, what would they be? I'm always eager to get get those answers from people around the industry.
Yeah, I think, you know, ultimately NFTs just kind of provide an identity layer for digital objects. You know, people in crypto love to talk about identity and reputation, and it's often quite complicated. And I think what's very cool about NFTs is it's extremely simple. You're just making an assertion, hey, here's this thing, and everyone can see like when it was created, who did it. And yeah, so I think basically it's a very simple identity standard for digital objects.
I like that. I often phrase it in the kind of, you know, the universal digital representation layer, representation and ownership layer also. It's exciting stuff. Beyond art, which is obviously your focus, which are the other applications of NFTs that you're excited about, if any?
Oh, yeah, let's see. I mean, I think it's all pretty fun, right? Like, you know, the digital land, I think, is a cool one. You know, I was, you know, pretty early kind of buying plots in Decentraland and Crypto Voxels. I think that's a super fun, exciting concept. I hope somebody somewhere is building like the Zillow for the metaverse. I think it'll be very cool to kind of have, you know, that style of like browsing real estate in the metaverse. Let's see. You know, I think having sort of like domain names as NFTs make a lot of sense. I know there's people kind of like pioneering there, like having more open, transparent markets around domain names would be super cool. And then, you know, something that hasn't really, you know, people love to talk about, but hasn't actually worked. So like, you know, game interoperability. I feel like it's like a talking point that sounds exciting, but like really hasn't happened yet. But I think it's a super cool concept. Like if we can successfully build standards and add some amount of, you know, interoperability across these kind of like game assets and different things people are collecting, that's a very powerful idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're already starting to see some people push for interesting interoperability of stuff, but still pretty early days. Although, as I say, there are quite a few projects. There's stuff like the horse racing game Zedrum, where you can take your horses into Decentraland and actually initiate, you know, races from the virtual trackside there and stuff, which is pretty neat. But Yeah, for those listening that might not be aware, wanted to give a bit of context. There was, I think, just over $20 million of crypto art was sold last year. The two largest platforms of those, Super Rare and sort of Nifty Gateway. With that as the context, John, do you have any predictions or sort of trends to watch this year for our cherished listeners?
Absolutely. I think we're certainly going to blow past that number in 2021. So I wouldn't be surprised if we at least added a zero and made it, you know, 200 million. I think it's an exciting time, right? We're seeing a lot of more, you know, mainstream artists, galleries, people like that kind of getting interested and excited, and I think often with, new technologies, people underestimate the impact they're going to have. And so, even though to some skeptics, it kind of seems like a game, seems silly, I do think it is a pretty profound sort of invention, having a simple standard like the NFT. I'm positive this year is going to be another record-breaking year.
For sure. It's exciting stuff. As Chris Dixon says, the next big thing does start looking like a toy. Obviously huge enthusiasm from those that have found this stuff already. So I don't doubt that at all that we're going to have another big year. You mentioned, starting to bring in a few more mainstream artists and stuff, but beyond the kind of typical UX frictions that are inherent in crypto, what other major obstacles must we overcome in order for these things to fulfill their potential, for the end user? And yeah, I guess from beyond UX, like what other sort of key considerations are there?
Let's see. I mean, I think education is a big one, right? Like a lot of crypto people understand the value in digital assets. But if you're somebody who doesn't think Bitcoin or Ethereum is important, I don't think you're going to think that, NFT digital art's very important either. And so I think we have a lot of work on the education front. So like just on our side, we've been trying to do more kind of content creation, like interviews with artists, interviews with collectors. Because I think a big part of it's just kind of like, you need to reframe the story a bunch of different ways because certain things resonate with, different things resonate with different people. So I think that's just a big one, just kind of like educating people. And that's, I think a challenge shared with the crypto ecosystem broadly. And then, this is sort of UX related, but I do think people are working on different display solutions. And I think that's just a big part of the storytelling for digital art. Like even, if the value, right, even if people can copy a file and someone else could put it on their screen, when I buy something, I still want to show it off to my friends and have it on the wall. And there's, that's kind of a fragmented ecosystem. So having a really good, clean solution for that, I think, kind of helps with the education and the storytelling.
For sure, yeah. You've referenced the metaverse a couple of times here. I'm curious to what extent you sort of subscribe to this idea of a metaverse in the longer term. How deep and how far does it go?
Oh, well, I think, it's already here, right? Like I feel like Twitter is kind of like metaverse light. We have this alternate reality we step into. People have, they have different avatars. They collect different things. It's not the same exact metaverse that, is predicted in Snow Crash, but I think it's like, it sort of already exists. And so, yeah, I'm super, very bullish generally on the metaverse. And I think, now we're just starting to see kind of more, visual elements maybe for the metaverse, right? Like, you have some of these different virtual worlds like CryptoVoxels, Decentraland, Somnium Space. But I guess I don't know that there's going to be like, one metaverse to rule them all. I imagine there's just going to be tons of these kind of choose your flavor experience, and it'll be kind of easy to teleport around and swap in and out of different ones. That's how I'm thinking about it right now. I'd be curious to hear.
Well, I often push back on the referencing individual projects or worlds as metaverses. People for some reason pluralize it, but I think you know, in its original formulation, obviously Snow Crash, but then having been elaborated upon by people like Matthew Ball and Tim Sweeney, you know, it's the idea of the metaverse, this ultimate universe that connects all of these different worlds together, and you have the full portability of assets and you can move around and sort of carry your goods with you and whatnot. You know, metaverse, the word comes from meta, the Greek, meaning beyond, and verse meaning universe. So it's something that like goes beyond, you know, just these individual sort of isolated virtual worlds. And it's once they're all kind of connected together, it unlocks this insane global virtual economy with sort of societal impact. So that's kind of where I stand on it. But obviously I recognize that we're still in the very, very, very early days of that. And it could take 50 years to happen in the way that some of us imagine it. But yeah, it's all very exciting.
And I think we're already seeing, right? You know, it's like just having, yeah, I guess people started with currencies, right? It's like Bitcoin is sort of a metaverse currency that has, you know, real world global impact already. It's pretty interoperable across platforms and ecosystems.
Yeah, absolutely. But, that's the that's the metaverse collateral, the base layer currency. I'm
there you go.
In all seriousness, I'm genuinely of the view that you know, none of this can that seriously come to fruition on the scale we speak of unless something like Bitcoin does exist, you know, that natively digital, non-sovereign sort of value transfer layer. It still blows my mind that that thing exists. It's so exciting to be a part of. But anyway, what is one thing that's become clear to you since you embarked on your whole crypto journey that you wish you'd known before?
I think, one thing is probably that people are just going to become okay with, you know, managing their own keys and wallets. I feel like, you know, we discussed internally a bunch and have tried out various solutions, but, you know, once artists and collectors, like, you know, people who haven't, you know, this is their first time kind of jumping into Super Rare, and so I'm using that as a reference, but just like they jump in, you know, try some kind of hosted wallet solution and then learn about MetaMask and kind of like the pros and cons. And there's like a 99% hit rate of people who are like, well, I want to, you know, export my keys and get MetaMask. So I think that was like, that's been kind of fascinating to watch that, you know, we love to talk about how, you know, terrible the UX is with wallet and key management and no one's ever going to do it. But I think, you know, I have a lot of firsthand experience seeing people kind of be confused, start to learn, and then totally embrace the kind of, you know, the crazy nature of crypto key management. So
that's really awesome to hear. That idea that it is going to be a complete barrier to entry, having to use MetaMask, was always a bit foreign to me. I mean, I get it's not seamless, but it's not that bad. And it's quite fun, you know, switching around, jumping between wallets and stuff. So it's encouraging to hear that you've seen evidence of that too. What do you see as the primary path to adoption, first for sort of crypto art, and then I suppose NFTs beyond crypto art more broadly?
Yeah, so I think, you know, a lot of people, especially when we first launched, they were like, I don't know, I can't even tell you how many people were like, you know what you need to do, John? You need to get Banksy on Super Rare. And I was always like, that sounds great. You know, I would be super thrilled if Banksy was on Super Rare. But I also think, like, what you also want to do is, like, not necessarily just have Banksy be creating digital art, like, have him be collecting digital art, right? I think, like, that's a big, you know, there's two sides to the ecosystem. And so getting, you know, exciting, influential people excited about, you know, digital art, for example, as a kind of like a path towards broader adoption for NFTs is, you know, definitely one of the best paths forward, right? Like having people with large audiences create this type of art is extremely important. But then the other side is also having people with large audiences become collectors and evangelicalize. Mm. Yeah, just like talk about, you know, why it's special, why it's exciting. Because I really think it's hard to understand if you haven't actually done it. And then once you go try it for yourself, you're like, there is something very tactile and familiar, you know, like you when you buy an NFT, you own it, and it feels like I went and bought something. I think it's pretty hard to explain, but I think that's one of the best ways is, in addition to bringing on world-class artists, we also need kind of world-class collectors. And so, and we've certainly seen that, right? There's people who are kind of out there beating the drum, talking about their collections, which is very exciting. But I think that's kind of like a big way to achieve mainstream adoption. Like one of the reasons I got super excited about digital art was that art's something kind of everyone already has a relationship with. You don't need to, with like Bitcoin and money, most people have very challenging relationships with money. It's a cause of stress in their life. So when you like want to philosophize about how the Fed works, nobody's interested in that. But if you want to say like, hey, why don't you pause your day for a moment and like look at this beautiful piece of art? It was created by, a kid halfway around the world. He's telling his story. That's super powerful. And so like, I think just as a path towards adoption, I think art's one of the best kind of options that we have.
Absolutely. That's really cool. Yeah. I'm curious, have you engaged much with any of these digital canvases that are coming to market? I think Samsung has the Frame, the TV version, but there's one called Cambia and various others that can allow you to actually hang this stuff and display it with an illuminated sort of backlight. Have you messed around with that stuff at all?
Yeah, the Samsung Frame is great. With the we need a good kind of software interface for it, which is something we may or may not be prototyping. And Mural, which is another kind of digital canvas. I think it was actually acquired by Netgear a couple of years ago. But that one's also super popular and pretty easy to use. So yeah, I think those are great. And projectors too. I think I've seen a couple projectors come onto the market that are, have a reasonably affordable price point and also look pretty cool in your home.
That's neat. Do you make any of your own art? Are we going to see any of your art on Super Rare?
So I do. Yeah, I do make art. Like that's kind of how I got interested in the space originally, was, doing kind of like creative coding. I don't sell any of my art on Super Rare. I always felt like, there might be like some type of strange conflict of interest, like as somebody helping operate and then also kind of like promoting my own art. But who knows? Maybe I'll start publishing it and you can buy one of my first pieces.
Yeah, there we go. Once you do it on the anniversary of Super Rare's launch or something, I'm sure there'd be appetite. We'd love to check that out at some point. I was always going to ask around sort of some of the business models that are being unlocked here. Do you think there's sort of dramatic further innovation to take place around the sort of art market and the crypto art market around, the way creators are earning money off these things? Obviously, we've seen the emergence of royalties that can allow them to kind of collect fees in perpetuity, which is really cool and doesn't really happen in the traditional art world. But, these things are very much programmatic or programmable rather. So I'm curious to get your thoughts around that. Do you think what's kind of emerged as the status quo on that front is here to stay, or have you got your eye on that landscape evolving in some capacity?
Yeah, I think there's certainly lots of room for experimentation. I think, one thing people have talked about, somewhat frequently is like, could be interesting if there was sort of a standard for, if you wanted to like lend somebody a piece of art or, potentially, I think we've seen people kind of like fractionalizing NFTs, which I think is pretty fascinating. Kind of like collective ownership is a cool idea. So I think, the royalties is were a nice place to start, right? It's pretty straightforward. Everyone understands sort of the, the use case. But I think there, as we've seen with Ethereum and like, the DeFi kind of like money Lego stuff, I think you can apply all sorts of different things to, NFTs, think about them as collateral. So if you wanted to, do all sorts of financialization, right? Like maybe you could upfront sell your future royalties or, who knows. I think there's a lot of, there's a lot more room for creativity there, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That's one idea that I'm really excited about is exactly what you just mentioned is, you know, being able to, again, program in like an upfront kind of financing for an up and coming artist. And, you know, investing X amount guarantees you a portion of all sort of future royalties collected through the platform or whatever. That's a pretty neat concept, which I haven't seen happen too much yet, but keeping an eye out for it. Kind of heading into the closing questions here, I have to ask this one because it's one of my favorites, but what is your favorite video game ever?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let's see. I mean, there's so many, but I guess like broadly, I think my peak video gaming was Super Nintendo, which, you know, dating myself for everybody. And there's a game called Killer Instinct that was sort of like Mortal Kombat. So, yeah, I don't know. That's probably that one I played the most. And then maybe second favorite, which you didn't ask, but I'll tell you anyway, probably Super Smash. That's just a classic.
Love it. Yeah, very good indeed. Yeah. Have you tried Brawlhalla at all? It's a modern incarnation of some of that stuff. It's pretty wicked. Recommend it. Video games, what is the most impactful digital experience you've had more broadly?
Let's see. Well, I'm just going to use this opportunity to plug a digital experience that we helped put together. We collaborated on with some super rare artists, but it was a VR exhibition, but it was in like kind of like a small custom world, so it was a little Unity world, and so it's sort of Atlantis themed, so it's kind of this like underwater immersive experience. So like, you know, it really kind of felt like a video game. Like it was there's sound and like, you know, you can hear the footsteps walking around and whatnot. But then at the same time, it was like, you know, these huge VR or, you know, kind of like 3D sculptures that were, you know, embedded in the world. So I love this idea that like, you know, video games and art are merging. You know, like there's sort of this like idea that like fine art is on one side of the room and then like video games are on the other side and they're not the same at all. And I think they're like, they're on a collision course and they're kind of like merging together. And, that was the first time where I was like, you know, something we had talked about. And then like, kind of like walking through the world, it was just like, oh, this is amazing. Like it kind of feels like a video game, but it's also this kind of like, you know, deep, awe-inspiring sort of like artistic experience.
I that stuff fascinates me. I think maybe on the dev kit one in like 2015 or 16 on the Oculus store, there was this one app in particular, and it was like something to the effect of Oculus Art, and it was all of these different virtual sort of world builders and virtual artists that had built these insane environments. But obviously, it's not just like a static room. You go into it, there are particle effects, you can move around. Some of the ones I think the first one I loaded into there was out in this snowy forest out in Asia somewhere, I'm not sure, had the Japan perhaps, it had those sort of Japanese red arches, and walked up the steps, like up to the top of this forest. And then all of a sudden I'm standing like overlooking this cliff, like down all over this insane landscape beneath me. And from right there and then many years ago, the tech's way better now. I was like, damn, this is going to be a thing because it was pretty special.
Yeah. That first kind of VR experience that resonates is definitely life changing.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'm excited about the state it's all in. I got all of my brother's VR headsets for Christmas. So they've been flying around in there for a while now. But it's all very exciting. Finally, out of all the books you've ever read, which one has resonated with you the most?
I guess broad strokes or just like general, probably something like Siddhartha, which I think I read like in like a high school philosophy class, but that was definitely like mind blowing. Ended up rereading it quite a few times. I don't know if you've read it.
What was the high level on that? What was it about?
It's sort of just, I mean, it's kind of like it's a historical fiction about this like Buddha like character, and it's kind of like life lessons learned. I think one of my favorite parts is like in the course of the book, he becomes this reasonably successful business person, and part of his success is due to the fact that, you know, everyone he's working with is like, all his competitors are taking everything very seriously, and he sort of has this like Zen attitude where, you know, it's, you know, it's more a game, it's not so serious. So anyway, yeah,
wicked.
It's a good one. It's also pretty short. Yeah,
I'll investigate. I'm sort of through all the questions I wanted to get through. Wanted to give you an opportunity for any sort of closing remarks on, you know, where we're at, where we're going, Super Rare, what to watch, all of that good stuff.
Sure. Yeah, everyone should keep an eye out. We got lots of fun experiments in the pipeline right now. One of my favorites is some, you know, we're playing around with a couple AR concepts. So I'm very excited about that. So everyone should keep an eye out.
Wicked. And in order to keep an eye out, where should people follow you guys and what you're up to stay in the loop?
Yeah, so probably one of the easiest places is on Twitter. So just at SuperRare. And the website is superrare.co. And also, everyone should come say hi in the Discord.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate your time. Love what you're doing. Excited about where it's all going. And yeah, we'll have to have you back on at the end of this year to reflect on the $200 million plus of art sales.
Yeah, Piers, absolutely. It was, yeah, a lot of fun. Let's definitely do it again. And yeah, we'll reconnect in December and see where we're at.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot, John.